They've got a field.
That's why I didn't get money back 2 years ago. I got money back and I didn't know.
Teacher, what do you want us to do with the exam?
No, that's all right, thanks. The Senate Education Committee will come to order. Quorum is present. We're going to accommodate Senator Kreif. He's got another bill pressing on his heels, so we're going to let him go first.
Okay.
And he is Senate File 946. It was laid on the table for possible inclusion, and so it really doesn't require a motion, Senator DeKreif, to take it off the table. So I'll just declare Senate File 946 is before us for consideration and action. You want to give us a brief review? It was amended with the author's amendment, the A4 amendment that is in your packet, and the fiscal note is there as well. And if you want to give us a bit of a review of it before we take a vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Senate File 946 is basically a joint partnership agreement that is it's a four-year pilot project is what it is. It allows six different opportunities throughout the state where three or more school districts could work together. And if they do that, we're hoping that that these school districts come up with innovative ways to educate our kids by us, the state, taking a lot of the state mandates away. And there's always been complaints about from our schools that there's so many rules and restrictions placed on them that keep them from doing the innovations that they would like to do. And this gives a group of schools a four-year window to try to show us how they can better educate our kids. I think I said in my opening statement before that I come from the world of business, and I truly believe the right way to manage is to first of all make sure you have the correct people in place and then give them the task at hand and then get out of the way and let them amaze you with the ways that they can come up with to accomplish the goal. So what I would love to do with this bill is I would like to I would move that we take Senate File 946 and take it from the table and as amended and pass it here from this body.
Very good. Is there any discussion or questions of the author or by members? Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Senate. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just don't have a packet.
You don't?
I have my agenda or my
I
bill.
I had two in mine.
Oh, that's what it is. It's just waiting to see who needed it.
There's the mystery.
Thank you, Madam
Thank
Chair.
Thank you. Okay, is there anybody that would like to testify on this issue? Ms. Alshager.
Madam Chair, I don't even have the bills are just being put out right now, so I don't have the bill before me.
Is there anybody else that's prepared to testify or that would like to testify on this matter?
I'm very excited.
While she's preparing her testimony.
Here's the bill.
It's a good bill.
It's a very good bill.
See?
We've got lots of time now, but if you want to expedite the session, with the exception of this
it allows
Ms. Alshager?
Public schools to act as charter schools for 4 years.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and I'm just got the language again here, so we testified against this in the Senate Education Committee earlier, Jan Alsweiger, Education Minnesota. And we are very concerned about this language because it allows a school district to just create a group of school districts to create a charter school. And these employees might be taken from their existing school district and transferred into a charter school, and then lose all of the salary that they already had in the other district, the benefits that they had in the other district, the working conditions, the days, the length of time, and so on. I think that there are a lot of unanswered questions. How would that happen? How would employees be transferred? Which ones would be transferred? Would they have an opportunity? Would it would it create layoffs for teachers in a current district? My guess is it would. So if four districts got together and said, we're going to create two charter schools, then there would not, there would still only be a certain number of kids in those boundary areas. And as a result, teachers, school employees would likely be laid off in the original school district. So we have serious concerns about this. This is probably one of the most significant change bills that we have seen in the legislature and should not be taken lightly. I really want to emphasize how big of a bill this is. And Senator Han is agreeing with me. So we would encourage you to vote against the bill, Madam Chair.
Senator DeCraft, could you just review again for everybody what it takes to make this agreement between the districts? And essentially, they don't become a charter school, but the same provisions would apply. And I don't, as I recall, there were choices within, even within charter schools, of whether they wanted to be part of a bargaining unit or not.
Madam Chair,
just procedurally, before we go there, we still have the bill on the table. Could we?
No, it's not on the table. I took it off the table before it was even moved.
We didn't officially lay it down. We laid it over.
Pardon me?
I'm sorry.
We laid it over.
I'm sorry. I thought we had a motion to pull it from the table. Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, what this bill does is it does allow some school districts to work together in a cooperative way. And they can act similar to a charter school, but they do not become a charter school. They are still funded, and they still work autonomously and individually. But through partnering together, they have a lot of rules taken away that they've been asking to have taken away. And where some schools may decide to reduce their work staff, but I'm not sure that that would be the primary objective. The primary objective is to innovate and try to find better ways to educate our children. And what I would love to see in this bill is I would love to see the opportunity for teachers to take the gloves off and start being able to actually get in there and help form policy and help find better ways to educate the kids that they don't have now. I want teachers to engage in this process, and I want teachers to be the driving force behind this. So where you may look at the glass like it's half empty, I look at it like it's half full. And I look at it like this gives teachers an opportunity to be at the table and be part of a process that might change education in Minnesota.
And Senator DeCraft, getting to the point of being the districts making that decision to do this cooperatively, I would presume would require the backing of the school boards. Do you see the teacher groups being involved in this whole decision in terms of deciding to participate at all, or what do you see that it will take in your view to be ones that likely would be chosen or be effective in being a good pilot project?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my intent of this bill would be that ultimately the final decisions would be made by the school boards. They are the elected officials that make the ultimate decisions. But what this bill would do is it would give teachers, I believe, a seat at the table where they would be very, very much involved in the innovations that would be coming forward. And I think they are going to be, I think, the group that comes up with the best ideas that we're not coming up with at this table, maybe. And I want to see teachers have that opportunity to expand their horizons to help us move education forward in Minnesota.
Ms. Altschweiger, would you envision a commissioner making a choice for a project that didn't have the backing of the teachers who are going to be the ones who are going to carry it out? If a proposal came in for what kinds of things that they wanted to do and be in this project, how do you see that being accomplished and even getting into the pilot project without the support of the people that are going to be educating?
Madam Chair, I think that's a very good question. If I look at the bill and I read the bill, the black and white, the words that are in the bill, There is nothing that requires exactly what you're talking about. There have been charter school conversion. There have been charter school conversion laws, where if you had a building, in order to convert it from a regular school building to or district building to a charter school, that you had to have teacher input. There is nothing in here that requires teacher input. And I would add, with all due respect, if you look at line 1.15, 1.16, and so on, it clearly says that this district participates in the pilot project under this section shall continue to be organized and governed by an elected school board with the general powers. If you go back to charter schools when they were first started, and Senator DeCraft, it is exactly as he was talking about. Charter schools started because they wanted to try something new. Let's get rid of some laws, rules, and regulations to empower teachers and parents. That was the initial goal. And there were just a few of them. We had a cap of just a few charter schools. And the majority of the charter board was to be teachers. That was in the early 90s. It has changed, so there is not a requirement for a majority of teachers. This commissioner can waive any kind of requirement for a majority of teachers. And, in fact, there have been a number of people coming to the legislature to have bills to make sure that there aren't a majority of teachers. And so I think if the senator has the intent of, as he described, this bill would need to be changed significantly, because we all know administrators who are very collaborative, and then we know others that are not. There is nothing in here that tells what kind of criteria the commissioner should use in determining who would be approved in the pilot. And this language clearly does not empower teachers. And in addition, if they wanted to make some serious changes to the teachers, they'd just start up this new program. Teachers, school employees would easily possibly be laid off, I would guess.
Well, Senator, Ms. Osweiger, I guess I have a little more confidence in our teaching community. And I do get a little tired of, and sometimes we're all guilty of that, of having to be so specific and tell everybody what to do. That's what we're trying to get away from, and I think that's what Senator DeCraif is trying to create a framework. It'll be interesting to see if three districts can get together and come. I mean, that's a major thing on its own, to work collaboratively and to, in fact, come forward with a proposal. I can't envision the current or any commissioner that I've ever known that would see that this would be a worthy pilot to select if they didn't have all the stakeholders that were a part of it to make it work. Otherwise, what's going to be proved? Are they going to, you know, drag them kicking, screaming into forcing them to do something? That's the exact opposite of, I think, what Senator DeCraif's intent is, and I think it should be quite obvious in reviewing this without having to create 10 more pages in the statute book.
Madam Chair, and if that's the intent, then I think it would be advisable to put something in this legislation that requires a vote of 60% of the teachers to support it, like there is in the conversion law. Then you can make sure that you get the teacher input. If what you say is what is your intention, that probably would offer some security. But that's just a thought.
Senator Bonner?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator DeCraif and Ms. Osweiger, you know, I've been working on trying to come up with some legislation for 4 or 5 years that would provide a framework for shared services, and have not been successful yet. And so when Senator DeCraif put this bill before me and had the buy-in of the schools and the districts, and it was the first time since I've been around this process that this idea came from the ground up. People were excited about it. It was put forward in a way that would allow for shared services, not just of the business services side, but the teaching and learning side. People could figure out who's got expertise. They could share it. You could do all sorts of creative things. And I concur with Chair Olson that the commissioner, as she looks at applications, would certainly not want to accept an application where it's clear that the staff isn't in support of that. I would think that would be critical in looking at that application. It doesn't need to be put into law. And I just think that people will rise to the occasion. As to how many applications, I'm a little bit skeptical because I have begged my own districts to come together and do that sort of thing, and there's a lot of barriers to having them do that. So I would hope that people would apply. I think it'll be challenging, but I think the fact that this came from the ground up gives some promise that it might happen. And Senator Olson, I hope we can find a way to find the money. I know it's just a little bit of money.
Thank you.
Is there a new fiscal law?
Senator Bonhoff, the amendment, I believe, took out the necessity of the fiscal.
Okay,
fiscal
because
note,
of
because
the
there really isn't any, you know, there isn't there. It's not changing things. It's the funding streams that are there that would just continue. So it's a matter of what happens locally that would bring it together and make it happen. And we'll never know whether it could actually happen unless we let it be tried.
So Madam Chair, I guess it's the using available department resources and staff, that part of the amendment. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. And Senator DeCraif moves that Senate File 946 be recommended to pass as amended. Is no further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, Senator DeCraif. Our next bill is Senator Nino. Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have here Senate File 939, this is a transportation-related proposal, particularly for ALCs and some disability transportation definition. Three basic things. Right now, ALC transportation, if you look in the Alternative Learning Center, or excuse me, Area Learning Center, if you look in the bill right now, the change will allow transportation between buildings, not just to and from on the bus route, as is current language. Also, it would require the Department of Education to maintain a broader list of bus safety instructional materials. Right now, it's kind of a limited. And it also would allow expenses for lift buses used for field trips to be classified as special transportation expense. Those are the three bullet points that this bill addresses, and we do have a couple of people that would like to speak to this, Madam Chair.
Mr. Mundell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's been so long. glad to be here today on behalf of MAPT. These are provisions that we have worked on over the last few years, but because of last year, there was no Education Conference Committee. We've had luck over the years getting them in one side or the other side, but we've never seemed to mesh things up. Dave Peters, I was going to say that you've heard many controversial and exciting bills this year. This is not one of them. And I think that I'll turn it over to Dave Peterson, the legislative chair from MAPT, to give you the details.
Yeah, I apologize. I was distracted by reading the bill. So radical thing to do, but so Mr. Peterson, if you would give us a little more, because I do have a question or two here. So
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is David Peterson. I'm the legislative chair committee for MAPT, and Brad always steals my thunder on these type of things, so I'm mainly here to just answer questions. I will add at this point that we did work with the Department of Education transportation staff and the school bus community in general looking at the language for the bill, and I think maybe I'd be able to answer questions if you have questions at this time.
The question, you know, when it says now districts may provide bus transportation along school bus routes when space is available for pupils attending programs at an area learning center, I presume that's picking them up from their home or whatever. But then you've added districts may provide between building bus transportation along bus routes when space is available. how does that, I'm finding that hard to mix those two concepts. Aren't they two different things?
Madam Chair, this section is trying to clarify current practice and current law that allows for both to and from school ALC transportation and for between building and ALC transportation. There was some concern with the word only, that it seemed to limit ALC transportation to only between building transportation. So it's actually no change in the law other than to attempt to clarify that ALC transportation can be both between schools and to and from school.
Well, Mr. Peterson, I guess I would think that some of the routes between buildings may not necessarily be along the regular school bus route. So I wondered if there's an and, you know, that you may provide between building bus transportation and bus transportation along school bus routes when space is available. I mean, the idea that you can do both. You could do pickup, but you could also move from one building to the next. And unless that the between building one is something that's a normal route that you're transferring and these kids could ride along, is that what you mean? Or
yes, Madam Chair, the intent of this paragraph is to allow ALC students to ride on between school buses without a allocation of cost to the ALC program. This paragraph does not intend to allow ALC students to ride to and from school without a cost being assigned to ALC students. So
okay,
it would be against the Department of Education's wish to expand the exemption from ALCs into to and from school transportation.
So, Mr. Chair, or Mr. Peterson, you are kind of limiting it to between buildings without charging the school, the schools, but you're not providing for the transportation of picking them up at the door along regular routes.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Or if they
correct.
Do, then they're charged? The ALC is charged for it?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure I followed the question.
Well, Mr. Peterson, maybe somebody else can help because I'm not sure I'm following the thought here of the beep, visualizing how kids get to ALCs. Do they get there picked up if there's space available along regular bus routes, or are you talking about getting there between building, transporting them between the buildings?
Madam Chair, typically the ALC students would ride their own buses to and from school, and typically the ALC students would ride their own buses between schools. On an occasional basis, the ALC students might be able to ride on a bus going between schools if being used by the students. And this paragraph attempts to not have any costs assigned to ALC students because there's no additional cost for those students riding between building routes in that situation.
Are there any other questions, or somebody can help straighten out the chair's thinking on this subject? Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if I'm fully following this either. What I'm envisioning is that the kids are all getting picked up at home and being driven to their home schools. And then there's transportation from their schools to the ALC location. Is that what you're referring to? So otherwise, I'm trying to envision why anybody's going from building to building. So, and I know I've been in programs where the kids initially get picked up from their homes on the regular bus route. They go to their assigned high school that they would normally go to. And then from there, they get bused from there to the ALC. Is that what you are referring to?
Yes.
Yes. For the tape. Yeah. We're all nodding our heads.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, I'm still trying to understand really the purpose of this and then the cost involved. So I'm trying to fit, what is the significance on line 1.15 and 1.16 of deleting that the cost would no longer be authorized for non-regular transportation? So you're deleting those words. So the cost of these services shall be considered part of the authorized cost rather than the authorized cost for non-regular transportation. What's the significance of that? And it must have something to do with who pays.
Mr. Peterson.
Senator, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the strike on non-regular transportation relates to that category of no longer being part of transportation funding. During the 1995 session, there was a major change in transportation funding for school bus operations, and the non-regular category was prior to that change and is now an obsolete term. So that's just a strike through to clean up the language.
Thank you. Madam Chair, could I have one follow-up?
Yes, Senator Nelson.
And so is there anything right now that's precluding you from doing what you want to do? I mean, does it take a legislative change to allow Area Learning Center students to ride buses between buildings?
Senator, there's nothing current in law that precludes this from occurring. This is just an attempt to clarify the language, but apparently not a very good attempt.
It's just the end of a long week is all. Madam, Senator Nito.
Madam Chair, and if council has suggested for better language, that we're certainly open to that. Senator, my understanding is that what we're spelling out here in this change really is going on today, but it's not explicitly permitted, and they just want to make sure that the language making that allowable, clearly allowable, was put into law, and that's what this portion here was for.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Lundell.
Madam Chair, I would add to that there have been massive changes in education policy and funding formulas over the last two decades. And as much as everyone tries to sweep out the old when the new comes in, you're still going to have some things that are kind of hanging on in statutes that need to be cleaned out. Part of what we're trying to do here, and again, a lot of this boils down to audits and other things that things can pop up, and folks are looking at why is this language still here? This is in statute. How are you doing this? How are you doing that? It may not have anything to do with anything. But this kind of cleans up that language and makes clear what current practice is.
And Mr. Lundell and I have been around here through most of that, and that's if we'd gotten it all right the first time, we wouldn't be necessary, would we? Senator Nelson.
Just one last question. Do we have a fiscal note on this? I didn't see it. Is there one? Or will there be a cost?
No, Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, there's no cost to this bill. The only thing that will happen is that in the third section about using the being able to use the lift buses to go as special ed is a capped appropriation. There may be some minor reallocations of dollars between school districts because of this transportation being eligible for special ed transportation. My guess is it would be very minimal amongst school districts, but there would be some, depending on what practices and who, how many people are taking field trips with lift buses. You have to have, the thing here is you just couldn't take a bus with a lift on it and have no kids that needed a lift. You'd have to have kids that would need a lift bus, and that would be then charged in the special ed account, and that's a capped appropriation, so there may be some reallocation of dollars, but it would be minimal statewide.
Thank you.
Back on that first paragraph, the idea is that you might ride to one building, be picked up at your home and come to school, but you may need to go to a separate building. And this would make that possible, and that would not add any cost to the area learning center for that additional ride again, if space is available?
Madam Chair, it'd be my, if space is available and the bus is going there anyway, you just have one extra kid on the bus. You're not getting a bigger bus. So if space is available, it's obviously,
I think what's confusing me, if you took out the first, the between building, and I'm not sure if you need it in the heading either, and you've taken out only, taking the other words, it would read, districts may provide bus transportation along school bus routes when space is available for pupils attending programs at an area learning center. The transportation is permitted between schools if it does not increase the district's expenditures for transportation. So that's getting in both of those concepts. Do we need that expression in the first round, which seems to confuse the pickup route that gets you to one building, and then you're having to maybe use another bus to go to the other one?
Madam Chair, I think with the intention of the paragraph to have it apply to between building ALC transportation, and it needs to have between building in the first sentence to clarify that the entire paragraph is pertaining to between building transportation, because it's not intended that ALC students ride school bus routes to and from school and not have any costs assigned to those students as ALC students.
Oh, okay, so this is just applying to the between building part of it. They can ride the other bus along those routes anyway.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. I'll quit fussing over this then. Sorry to take up so much of the committee's time with trying to get it through my head. Any further discussion on this bill? If not, Senator Ninau moves it.
I'll move the bill, Madam Chair.
Senate file 939 be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
The bill is passed. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee.
Senator Nelson, so this was just laid over for possible consideration, so we can just bring it up and take action.
Okay, Senate file 1073, you just heard it a couple days ago, regarding career planning post-secondary plans. It's the governor's workforce development council recommendation number 11. Would you like to know more about that?
Does anybody need a refresher on the committee? Is there anybody that would care to testify on this bill? Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Karen Ephraim, and I'm here on behalf of Education Liberty Watch, and I will first of all, apologize to Senator Nelson for not having contacted her, but because of dealing with a number of other bills, didn't know that this was going to be brought up again. Our concern is not that children receive career counseling, because that is important, but we are concerned about how this is done, what data is kept, and the privacy concerns, as well as the involvement of employers and agents and economic development agencies, government agencies in these decisions. And we would just wonder how this is going to be kept more a student and family decision. And that those are our concerns. It's not really clear from this language, especially the language on 2.5 through 2.8.
Senator Nelson, do you care to respond?
Yes. This is the first time I've heard about these concerns, but I think there were two concerns I heard. One was about data privacy, and let's address that first. There's a lot of private data in our school systems, and I would assume that everything in this bill would be covered by the same data privacy controls that we have with all of our K-12 education. So I don't see that there's anything unusual or different about this. And then I think the second concern had to do with, I think, government, employers, and economic development agencies and how they might impact the planning. Is that right, Dr. Ephraim?
Yes.
And also how families were involved. And I will ask the committee to note that because I do believe families are the first, parents are the first and foremost educators of our students, and have the responsibility for raising their children, I have specifically included families in the language, both in point 6 and point 7, that the plan should help students and families identify collaborative partnerships. So if there's other language that we need to incorporate to make sure that families are involved, I think that's a great thing to do. At this point, I'm not sure what that might need to be. And then I think the concern was about the government. I don't notice anything in here about the government being involved. Might I ask a question to them? Are you concerned that the government might encourage that some government agencies might encourage students to go into certain careers? Or I'm trying to flesh out what that concern is exactly.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, yes, we are concerned about that, given what has already happened with, for instance, the career clusters and the requirement that Minneapolis and St. Paul eighth graders already have to choose a career path. We just want to make sure that this isn't another effort to do that sort of planning.
Okay. So I think the concern then is about tracking. Are we asking students to get into a certain track at a particular age? I think that's a good question. That is not the intent of this legislation. I don't know that there's anything in here that would indicate that. We do, I believe there's language in here that encourages parents and family, that the plan would help students gain access to post-secondary education and career options, identify personal learning styles, rigor and high expectations. I guess that as the author of the bill, I can tell you that is not the intent of the bill.
And Dr. Ephraim, take a look. Sometimes we are so busy looking at the new language that we forget to look at what's in the current law. And 2.14 to 2.17, a school district may develop curricula around these various careers, but must not require any curriculum instruction or employment-related activity that obligates an elementary or secondary student to involuntarily select a career, career interest, employment goals, or related job training. So I think that's pretty protective. This is an optional. It says school districts are strongly encouraged to assist all students in these things through having a plan for it and how to, you know, provide information to students that would be helpful to and families that would be helpful to them in making those decisions. I would hope that we wouldn't be attempting to micromanage, because I've heard from even from years past parents expressing some concern about their child being told that they aren't college material or they can't do this or whatever, and expressing, I know one friend expressed some appreciation that if it hadn't been for an industrial arts teacher in that her son's life, he probably wouldn't have gone on to have a master's degree level education and a very successful career. So it's important not to be discouraging young people, and it should be things that are positive, at least opening doors for their thought and decision-making rather than, and I don't see anything that does restrict that. And again, it is an optional. So I hope that
thank you, Madam Chair.
But I appreciate your vigilance. It's good.
I thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure that the committee was considering potential concerns with the bill.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Senator Nelson?
Madam Chair, might I renew my motion and that this bill be recommended to pass and sent to the floor?
Thank you. Senator Nelson moves Senate File 1073 be recommended to pass. Senator Wicker.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I support it. I just want to remind everyone that if we had enough counselors or if districts had the tools to really implement this, it would have a much better chance of getting done. We've had previous testimony that we perhaps have the fewest number of counselors per student in America, or it's perhaps at 49th, and the counselor is the key person in putting together these career plans. So to the extent that we put a very important objective in statute, which I support, it would be so much helpful for a district to have the staffing in order to accomplish it. So I just want to remind persons of that, because counselors in a few of my districts have reminded me of this frequently.
Thank you, Senator Wicker. Senator Nelson?
Well, just a brief comment. Senator Wicker, I think you bring up a great point. I think, however, though, actually this particular legislation, which strongly encourages career post-secondary plans, will actually make the case for counselors within our school districts. And our school districts do have those options. They can certainly hire the staff that they choose. It's just not mandated right now, but I think that this particular legislation will increase the demand for those counselors.
And Senator Wicker and Senator Nelson, I think that what it also does is in their development of the plans, I think individual teachers can have a great deal of effect, as I just used as an example, in helping and encouraging young people, and particularly in fields they're familiar with, at least to let them know of what some of their options are, too. So hopefully the school community, as well as the larger community, can be a wealth of information to draw on toward this end. Thanks. I don't think we've... No further discussion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The bill is adopted. Senator Benson, I think Senator Wolf had to go to another committee to vote, and so... Welcome back, Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I return to you with a significantly revised Senate File 612. We have a delete all amendment.
So I believe did we take a motion to get this one off the table?
Yeah, this one was just, let's see. This one was
yes,
Could we have a motion from someone to take this this bill, 612, off from the table?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson moves that Senate File 612 be taken from the table, and Senator Benson probably like to have, even though it's not the first hearing, it's, I think, your first amendment to the bill. We'd consider the A4 an author's amendment that you would like to have us have before us for consideration.
I would appreciate if someone would move the A4 as an author's amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A4 amendment, please.
Senator Nelson moves the A4 amendment. There's no discussion at the moment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will briefly review. This is concussion legislation put forward for the purposes of improving education for coaches, parents, and youth athletes on the risks of concussion as it occurs in youth athletic contests. And because we've heard much of the testimony before, I will briefly review the changes that were made. On line 1.18, we changed it from an annual to once every 3 years, further reducing the burden for some very busy folks.
Now, are you referring to the original bill? You've got to delete everything, or 1.18. Sorry.
1.18.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you.
It should be in your amendment. And then continuing, page 2, line 2.12. It was important to the organizations affected by this that we be clear that we don't intend to increase their liability. So we added that to the language. Line 2.28, we wanted to make sure that the person doing the evaluation was within their scope of practice. Line 2.32, and members of the committee.
Could you stop for a minute? The second one that about the liability, where was that?
Line 2.12 or 212.
That doesn't have anything to do with liability there.
I'm sorry. I'm reading off of the House language.
Oh, is it 2.3?
You know what, ma'am? Madam Chair?
2.3.
I apologize. It's 2.3.
Thank you.
I did my highlighting on the House language. I apologize. 2.3, you're correct. It's liability. Then as we move down to line 2.19, deals with a scope of practice for the person doing the evaluation or the final approval. Line 2.23, starting with the word "for purposes of school-sponsored sports under this section, youth athletic activities are extracurricular activities." This was specifically added so that we did not confuse FIED. And continuing, see, I want to make sure I'm catching up with your language. On page 3, line 3, a sports governing body that posts or provide links has complied with the requirements. Again, just being clear and trying to make it as easy as possible. At the end of that paragraph, 3.9, again, it's every 3 years, hoping to reduce some of the burden while maintaining our legislative objective. Then on line 3.12, this was particularly important for some of our inner city schools. If a parent of a youth athlete must sign a consent form, then the form should include information about the nature and risk of concussions. There were organizations that don't require parental consent, and they were afraid that requiring parental consent and concussion sign-off information would reduce participation in their programs, and so that was an accommodation for them. And then the end of the bill, on again, We refer to liability on page 3, line 2.9, or I'm sorry, line 29. Does not create any additional liability, restating that. It is not our intent to give lawyers a free-for-all. It's our intent to educate people about concussions. And then, let's see, page 4, line 1, new language that the league may adopt policies that exceed the requirements of this section. There's no punishment for doing more work. So, and that is the summary of the changes. I would be happy to stand for questions, and I believe that there might be some audience members who'd like to comment further.
Thank you. Senator Benson, when you refer to the league, is this in a section of law that that's understood? That I presume that's the state high school league.
Yes, ma'am. The
and that's state that's somewhere league. In the earlier.
I would rely on counsel for
maybe
that.
I could just check to the last the new addition here. The league, it says the league may adopt a concussion awareness safety that exceeds the requirements of section. Is that referenced in here the league somewhere that? That ties it to which one it's talking about?
Madam Chair, members, the if you look over at page 3, line 34, okay. It's amending section 128C.02, and 128C is the high school
league. It is the high school league. Okay, just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
The section, thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Weger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Charter schools are public schools, but I'm not sure if it's clear that this would apply. By way of Mr. Nellman, I had the question directed to council, and I believe it wasn't clear. Senator Benson, is it your intent that this would apply to charter schools?
Yes, it is our intent that it would apply to charter schools.
So, Madam Chair, if I could ask council if additional language would be needed to clarify? Or
Madam Chair, members, you probably need to list it in the charter school law, not within this. That's not contained in the bill itself, because we do have a list of statutes and chapters and such that are applicable to charter schools in the charter school law, 124D10.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, if that's the author's intent, perhaps an appropriate amendment could be drafted on its journey.
And Madam Chair and Council, I would appreciate your help on getting that amendment together, possibly after these hearings. I believe this, we've requested that it be included in the omnibus bill.
So, Senator Benson, we're not certain as to whether we will have an omnibus policy bill.
I apologize.
But so would you like to have it go on its own? But if we do have one, we could always have the liberty of incorporating it.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. This is my fourth bill today. I would like this one to travel on its own.
You've been busy. I was looking at the legal liability, I think, would a school, a school district, or any officer, certainly I would think would cover charter schools, would it not?
Chair, I think council was suggesting that it would make more sense to include it in the charter school law.
Just reference this, or?
Well, I'd defer to council on that, but.
Madam Chair, members, within the charter school law, it would be a reference to that section. But it still obviously need to be an amendment to this bill to do it. But just because of the way the charter school law is saying they're exempt from all statutes unless you say they apply. So we do have a list that apply. So we just add it to the list.
Is that your pleasure? You would like to?
I would like to amend such that the charter school statutes would be affected by this legislation, so that this would apply to the charter schools as well.
Is there any discussion? Well, we haven't got the amendment before us. So,
Senator Bonoff.
Madam Chair, just a comment, Senator Benson. I don't know if you've gotten these calls too, but I actually got a call from the Vikings trainer urging my support for the bill. I was pleased to get the call and shared with him that I was a co-author and was proud, as well as I did speak to the trainer at or the athletic director of my district. People are very excited that we're moving forward with the legislation.
Senator Bonoff, thank you very much. I did not get a call from the Vikings trainer. However, the trainer at Blaine High School did speak to me.
Senator Benson, have you talked with either the local government or judiciary chair as to whether they want to review this at all?
Madam Chair, I have not heard from either of them, but if there are sections of this bill that bump up against their statutes, I'd be willing to take another hearing on it.
Is there any concern or consideration about that? Some of you are members on those, Senator Daley?
Madam Chair, I wanted to bring up a different topic.
Okay, go ahead.
I wanted to follow up on previous testimony that Mr. Rourke had in his session, and I think
Your mic is kind of out of line, and you're not picking up.
Respect. Can you hear that now?
Yeah.
With respect to local athletic associations, has language here been changed to address if, let's say, I'm an Eagan Athletic Association soccer coach? So Rourke brought that kind of situation up last time. Has that been addressed with these changes?
Senator Benson.
Madam Chair and Senator Daley, that was the purpose for adding the additional liability language to make it clear that we didn't intend to expand their the risk of them doing their job well. It was also the
specifically that's addressed in line 2.3, perhaps? Is that
part? It would be 2.3.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And also, out of respect for the amount of work that they have ahead of them in planning for their seasons, that they only do this every 3 years instead of annually. And so those were both accommodations.
Senator Stump?
Madam Chair, and this is more of a question that relates to, and I think it's Legion baseball. I don't think it's really a school sanction. It's usually, you know, a summer activity that the American Legion in a town supports. How is that picked up, or is it not picked up under this? And how would they find out about this if, you know, it just happens that nobody tells them?
Senator Benson?
Madam Chair and Senator Stump, it is, they would fall under the umbrella of the city or nonprofit organization organizing youth activity. If you refer to page 1, line 4 through 5, that's where they would fall. And we're not really using force to get this information out. We want it to become organic, bubble up from the ground, and provide coverage that way. There is nothing punitive in this bill, so we hope that they will reach out and use these resources without the force of law.
Senator Eno?
Madam Chair, I just was going to, when we were discussing committees that it might go through, and I was just going to ask if this has met deadline in the House and before we just send it off to judiciary. I don't serve on judiciary, but I have friends who do. And they are very busy, odds are my guess is it wouldn't get a hearing. So if it needs to go there, it needs to go there. But if it does not, I hate to just send it there.
As members, as you observe here, now they've taken the liability off from it. Maybe that reduces the necessity unless Senator Limmer would decide if it went to the floor that he wanted to hear it. Senator Wigger, do you?
Madam Chair, I believe last time I asked the question as to whether the reference to city embraced township, and I wanted to get clarification. I'm sure that the liability would also be addressing townships, but we still say just city. So is there clarification that when we refer to city, that would include township, or do we need to include that or reference to municipality or something else?
Senator
Senator Stumpf, you've got a lot of townships in your, do they conduct a lot of, the township government conduct a lot of youth activities?
When you talk about townships, you also talk about small cities, mm-hmm. small towns, and so they do.
But they would be covered under the term city, wouldn't they?
Madam Chair, I spoke with counsel for the Tax Committee the last time this bill was up when that question came up, and I received the advice that if we say city, it just means cities. It doesn't include townships.
But small cities would still be cities.
Certainly. I'm not the expert in this, but the advice that I was given was that we probably should say municipality, if that's what we mean.
Mm-hmm. Municipalities, at least in some form of law, that includes school districts. Municipality is all-encompassing.
Madam Chair.
Senator Stumpf.
Just a question on the liability. If we state in statute that this does not, this kind of removes the any additional liability, how does that actually do that? And I mean, legally, I'm not an attorney, but if we say, oh, you're not really liable if you don't follow the rules, no, what would a court do in that case?
Senator Benson?
And Madam Chair, Senator Stumpf, it is not our intent to give them an out if they don't follow the rules. It's to say if you are following the rules, if you're doing your best, we don't want lawyers swarming in on Little League games to make sure coaches are observing and sitting their players down. That's the intent of saying no additional liability for following this.
Madam Chair and Senator Benson, Stumpf. I understand the intent, but I'm just wondering legally, does that absolve liability?
Madam Chair, members, it doesn't absolve liability if they don't follow the lay of the land or the requirements. Again, as Senator Benson said, it's trying to protect them. If they actually do everything they can that's required, then there can't be a finding of liability for them. So it protects them if they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, but it doesn't protect them to go against what they're supposed to be doing. So I guess it gives them some just satisfaction if they're following the law that that they aren't going to get a judgment against them if someone goes to takes them to court about it.
Senator Rieger.
Madam Chair, and perhaps Judiciary will look at this, but I'm thinking that taking out the word in line 2.3 additional might make that clearer as to your intent that it does not create liability, this section, by putting in additional liability. I'm wondering about the underlying liability that might be there. I think you know what I'm saying. So I just put that as a question. We aren't going to resolve that here, but also we haven't resolved the issue of townships, and I would like to see this move ahead, but also to get addressed at some point.
Covered in the definition of municipality.
Do you hear me, Sarah, now?
Okay. Madam Chair.
Senator Benson.
We do have some assistance with the word additional.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Nathan Peterson here on behalf of Sanford Health. And just wanted to mention that the inclusion of the word additional is something that came up in a House hearing. And at the time, the advice we were given is that by including additional liability, it would maintain any existing liability that an individual organization may have in the event of an injury. But it would clarify that by enacting this law, it wouldn't create a greater level of liability for those individuals, or that the aspects of this law wouldn't create a new condition whereby somebody would be sued.
Senator Thompson, did you look like you were going to say something or ask something? Or
yeah, well, I've been trying to serve two mistresses. It's not going well, so I've been down at Judiciary. But
Madam Chair, we are on TV.
in other words, watch your language.
Yes, the concern I have with the bill is while I certainly understand the intent is not to create additional liability and that sort of thing, there's also a concept in law that says if a an affirmative duty is put upon you, that you sometimes end up being held to a higher standard of care. And also, this is kind of putting the world on notice of this, you know, responsibility that exists now in overseeing individuals that have had a concussion, those kinds of things. And I don't think there's anybody that would even think to argue the notion that we need to be watching over young people who have sustained a head injury. That's a no-brainer for everybody. But I am concerned that this opens up a Pandora's box of potential claims. I would even fear that some organizations may be concerned to the point of wanting to stay away from sponsoring athletic activities. I think it's something to think about in this particular situation.
Sir, do I have any response, Senator Benson, or any of your witnesses?
Madam Chair and Senator Thompson, I share the same concern. It was one of the first things that I brought forward with this when this bill was brought to me. And I hope that the language helps somewhat. I understand that we can't overcome years of precedent by simply adding a few lines of legislation, but I think by discussing it and placing it firmly in the legislation, that if somebody ever did try to take an organization to court, that it would be clear that the intent wasn't to put additional burden of liability on those people responsible or those people laid out in this legislation.
Madam Chair.
Senator Reeder.
I'd like to make an oral amendment at lines 2.3 to delete the word additional between any and liability. And also at line 2.4, after city, before business, insert township and a comma. And at 2.5, after city, before business, insert township, comma. And Madam Chair, the intent is just to make it a little clearer with the understanding that it's still going to be reviewed by many. Since we didn't get a clear answer on some of the points raised.
Dr. McQuay or Sager, could you repeat the amendment or whoever's?
Madam Chair, the amendment that Senator Weger offered would be to, on line 2.3, delete the word additional, and 2.4, after the second comma, insert township comma, and on 2.5, after the comma, insert township comma. And then I would also add, if the intent of the committee is to remove the word additional from the additional liability, I would also point the committee to page 3.29, line 29, and additional is also there.
That would be included.
I have a question.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I thought that from the legal perspective, the word additional is actually necessary because it speaks to the new portion of the law that is before us. And when you say additional, it implies the additional liability related to this new rule. And I agree with that. I think that additional needs to stay because it applies. So there is liability in general. Now, we have a new provision, which is this. And what we're saying in this language here is that it does not create any additional liability, which speaks to the essence of what we are discussing here, which is additional liability related to this new provision of law. And so I do agree with how the author had amended this to make sure that this is additional liability related to additional law, in other words, or new law. I think that we shouldn't take additional out.
Madam Chair and
Senator Benson.
Senator Weger, as part of your amendment, if you'll accept my comment, page 1, I'm to make sure I'm on the right document. At 1.4, we also refer to city business and nonprofit. We would have to add township, comma, there as well in order to complete the amendment.
Okay, and I would add that, and then, Madam Chair, if I could then yield to the author and ask her whether she'd consider this friendly.
If we could divide the amendment, I definitely would consider the township portion friendly. I would object to the removal of the word additional in those two places for the reasons stated by Senator Torres-Ray.
Senator Benson, I don't believe this would be a divisible. I think you'd have to either delete an amendment to the amendment to delete that one piece then. If that's, is there any further discussion on?
Madam Chair, I may just withdraw the part on the additional liability. It only applies to that section, but if it's going to be heard by judiciary, they can. So I'll withdraw that part and just focus on township, with the understanding that it's supported by the author.
Thank you.
Okay, all in favor of the amendment to insert township in those positions? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Then I will tell you that Cook has checked with Judiciary, and they don't necessarily need to see this. So now we've got the additional as a separate divisible. If you still want to go that route to offer that, or is there any further discussion on that concept of why additional liability is or is not necessary?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the word additional is important. We don't want to touch pre-existing liability, but once this legislation is enacted, we want to protect the people affected by this statute from any additional liability that would be incurred by the implementation of the provisions of this legislation.
So, and could you explain why this section does not create any liability?
It doesn't
do the same thing? This says here this section does not create any liability. Is that make the word additional redundant? Or I think that's what Senator Wieger may be getting at. Is there other legal minds that would like to
we're not creating that
discuss this? Senator Thompson, you did weigh in. Do you want to add anything to this?
Well, Madam Chair,
Senator Thompson.
I think this whole discussion is demonstrating the fact that we open up a lot of potential unintended consequences with this legislation, and that's my concern.
Okay.
I understand that there's no specific component of this that would force it into judiciary, but there's no doubt in my mind that this potentially has significant ramifications in the area of tort law, and that's my concern.
Is there any other discussion? I think, to Dr. Ephraim, you wish to.
Madam Chair.
Senator Nabana.
Madam Chair, when Senator Wieger made his amendment, that made sense to me, given the redundancy potential of the word additional, but I also sensed from those around the table and in the room that that was an agreement that was made with those who were concerned about the liability, and that there was a certain buy-in of that word. And so I think once you take that word out, now if it really doesn't change it one way or another, now all those who have agreed to accept the new change, I think probably want to go back and check that out. So I don't know if I'm putting words in your mouth, Senator Benson, but that's my sense that this is a negotiated agreement.
Thank
Senator
you,
Benson.
Madam Chair and Senator Bonoff, this was language that was brought after much discussion, and so I am reticent to remove it. It has been through the House, and while we are a more deliberative body, I would like to leave the language in there out of respect for the work that's been done to this point.
Dr. Ephraim.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Karen Ephraim, and I'm here not as much on behalf of Education Liberty Watch, but as a pediatrician and a relative of someone who's been dealing with concussions. And I just want to point out that it kind of matches the liability discussion, the legal discussion, but also there's medical issues with this, because how an individual child responds to a concussion is highly, highly variable. Just the there are some symptoms that are immediately evident, and there are some symptoms that go along with the guidelines from the CDC, but there are things that are not always evident, and they're not always evident immediately. And I am concerned that this type of legislation, while having a wonderful, wonderful intent, is going to put responsibility on coaches and athletic associations that, even if they do their absolute utmost to follow the legislation, it's impossible, because the individual neurological manifestations of a concussion are so variable. And so I just want to point out that, as Senator Thompson said, you may be opening an enormous Pandora's box here. So, and this is, you know, to say exhibit signs, symptoms, and behaviors consistent with concussion, I can give you cases where those signs, symptoms, and behaviors didn't show up for weeks after. But this will make a coach or a trainer or an athletic director responsible. And I just think it's very dangerous to proceed. It's wonderful intention, and if it can be done with just providing information, great. But if you're trying to hold a coach or a team or whatever responsible for when a child can re-enter based on this, I don't think it's going to work. I just don't think it's practical, because the signs and symptoms are so varied. So now are we good? So that's my concern. You know, I'm not going to say that Education Liberty Watch is going to oppose this bill or it's going to be the hugest issue, but I really think that you would be creating a lot of complications for a lot of people by implementing this bill.
Senator Thompson.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. And obviously, I defer to Dr. Ephraim on the medical issues. With Senator Wieger, I think, proposed an amendment that makes sense. And yet, even that might not rectify the problem, because when you look at responsibility for injury to someone or a failure to properly take care of someone who has been injured, you ask yourself, what is the standard? If there's no statutory standard, you then apply a reasonable care standard. What would a reasonable person have done under the circumstances? That's your classic legal negligence standard. This sets a whole new standard. By definition, it creates a whole new, if I'm a plaintiff's lawyer, I'm looking line by line by line by line, saying, did the governing authority, whether it's a school district or a municipality or wherever, do these things? And if they missed out on one, I think that I potentially have a claim. And the other side of this thing is, if I'm a lawyer advising a governing authority that's overseeing a child who may or may not have post-concussion syndrome or something like that, and they ask me, well, when do I let this kid go back? When they turn 19. we can't take the risk of letting them go back, because I have dealt with a few head injury cases in my life, and as Dr. Ephraim stated, you don't know. Symptoms show up. They manifest themselves in all kinds of different ways, in different time frames, I feel badly, because obviously the intent of this legislation is nothing but good, I think we all understand that. And I'm not going to tell the members how I think, you know, people should vote. You've all got to make up your mind. But I think we need to understand this isn't one of those, oh yes, we're all concerned about concussions, vote yes. There are some real significant potential ramifications. Forget lawsuits that are actually filed and damage awards. Just think about the possibility that organizations are simply not going to take the risk of sponsoring youth sports. I think that's something we need to be concerned about.
Madam Chair, I also was wondering if we could have an amendment to address volunteers. We address the liability issue for employees as well as officers for cities, townships, businesses, nonprofits, but we don't refer to volunteers. Am I correct on that, Senator Benson? Maybe someone in your group. If not, otherwise I was going to offer to put volunteer in two different spots.
And if, Madam Chair, Senator Wigger, we do not specifically address volunteers, but I'm not sure if that's because they're covered somewhere else in statute as being.
Ms. Yonker? Madam Chair, members, the reference to on line 2.2 to section 604A.11 is a section that relates to volunteer athletic coaches and officials. And that's an immunity for liability for those volunteers.
And Madam Chair, Ms. Yonker, that provision that you just cited, that would include anything stated in this bill for any volunteer. So the duty that's put in here now that has some express provisions that would limit liability, any additional liability, it would not be necessary to state it in here as well, where we refer to employees and officers, volunteers, or would there be any harm in us adding that?
Madam Chair, members, to point out that the reference to the volunteer coaches and officials only is limited to failing to remove the youth athlete from the activity. It doesn't talk about the other aspects of this provision.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Benson, then I think if it's that limited, I'd rather see it broader, the liability protection for the volunteer. So I'll offer an oral amendment at line 2.4 between officer and or. Insert a comma after officer and the word volunteer and a comma. And the same would go at line 3.30 after officer between the word or. Insert comma, volunteer, comma, so it's consistent. And then we'd ask counsel to restate it and ask Senator Benson if she's comfortable with that. And I totally respect all the work that you've put into this. But trying to look, I was on an athletic board and coach for 25 years, and I've seen some of the potential problems that could exist too, though I know your heart is in the right spot, but I just want to make sure there's not unintended things.
And Madam Chair and Senator Wigger, I appreciate the addition of volunteer. We'll wait till the amendment is officially read out for us.
Senator Benson?
Madam Chair, I believe Senator Uyghur requested that council read back the amendment.
Ms. Yonkers?
Madam Chair, members, on line 2.4, after officers, or excuse me, after officer, insert comma, volunteer, comma. And then on page 3.30, after officer, insert comma, volunteer, comma.
And
Senator Benson.
Madam Chair, Senator Uyghur, I would consider that a friendly amendment, barring any legal ramifications that I don't understand about the addition of volunteer.
Perfect. So is there discussion of that amendment? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair.
I think Senator Nelson first and then Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, we've certainly given this bill a lot of discussion, and it's had a lot of work outside this room as well, and I would encourage members to support this piece of legislation. I think we could tweak this to ad nauseum, and in the meantime, we might have kids who end up with concussions and permanent injuries. So I'd encourage that we move on that. But there is one item that we haven't quite clarified yet, and I want to thank Council for putting together for me the A7 amendment, which I'd like to offer at this point, Madam Chair. Thank you. And Madam Chair, members, this amendment I think you'll all be happy with, actually. It is an amendment that would apply this statute to charter schools. I believe that was the author's intention. I think it's the intention of this committee. And so we have an amendment in front of us so we can get that done today.
Senator Nelson offers the A7 amendment, which you'll note on 2.16 and 17 that applies to charter schools that provide school-sponsored youth athletic activities. Is there any discussion on that amendment? Not all received it yet. Carrie? Any discussion? Anybody that wishes to testify relative to that? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The A7 amendment is adopted. Mr. Nauman has done a little research in the interim as well. Are you ready to offer that? Or was there Senator Stumpf, let's give him a little breather here first, because you had indicated you wanted to.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. It just seems from listening to the testimony, and I know we spent a lot of time on this, that I think it would be better to make this a information approach, at least to start out with. And I sorry, I haven't heard if the school districts have testified on this, but I really agree with Dr. Ephraim and I think Senator Thompson on the overall impact that this is going to have on a lot more than what we actually want to get at. We're not going to prevent concussions, but I think what we really want to get at is where a concussion has occurred. And we want to be sure that people are aware of the fact of what a concussion is and that a repeated concussion is going to be extremely detrimental. So really the point that I think we should try to aim for is educating our young people, our parents, our coaches, and we could do that without a whole lot of additional potential for liability or increased costs for insurance. I can just imagine the insurance costs if I was an insurance agent and I saw this whole potential. One slip up by a coach may mean that you know, the school might be liable, the insurance costs might go up, and I think we can achieve the same goal without having to do a lot of the things that are spelled out. You know, on page one, if we went down to line 1.24, it really gets at the essence of, I think, what we're after. And a good coach, if he's aware, certainly shouldn't put a young person back in an activity. But I've seen that happen many times because the coach either wasn't aware or the desire to win was more important than the health of a young person. So that's just my feelings. I don't have an amendment or anything, but
is there somebody would like to Senator Wolf?
Sorry, not to belabor this. Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I want to thank you. This is improved from the first version that I saw, but as a coach, I've been a volunteer coach. I've also been a paid coach. I've coached everywhere from 4-year-old T-ball to college level fast pitch, and there's still parts of this that makes me nervous. And I'm going to vote for it here, but I'm still going to do some research because I don't want to kill the bill because it's got a good intent. But the parts that make me nervous as a coach, that's been brought up with some of the concerns as far as the medical part. Even trainers and most high school and college level sports have a trainer there. When an injury occurs, they go through their checks of, you know, count backwards, and they have all those things that they've determined as their checks. If the kids pass that at that time, they go back in, and the concussion may not show up for 3 days later. I had a concussion once, and the symptoms didn't show up for 3 days. What I would be nervous about is if I'm coaching, you know, Johnny in basketball in one of those smaller gyms, and Johnny overruns the baseline, hits his head on the wall, I'm going to put him on the bench because I don't want to take that risk potentially that he might end up having a concussion, and I would feel horrible if I get one of these stories like the young lady that was here the last time who continued to practice for days and then, you know, there was a severe problem. I wouldn't want that on my conscience for the rest of my life. So that those parts of it make me nervous. And then, you know, it's not how many more things are going to come down the road that we need to, and I consider myself very knowledgeable. I'm trained in first aid, CPR, athletic injuries, and this makes me nervous. So I can imagine the volunteer coaches potentially this might put a damper on them being willing to step forward and be coaches if they fear that. And then where do we start adding additional injuries in there? You know, my son had a fracture on his foot. Coach let him play for the next 3 weeks before we realized it was broken. Should there have been signs that we could have addressed? Should they have let him practice? So this can bring up other issues. So I'm not ready to kill the bill because I like the idea, but I, like I said, as a coach, there's still parts of it that make me nervous.
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir. Identify yourself for the record.
My name is Brent Milliken, and I am an athlete trainer. I'm also the president of the Minnesota Athletic Trainers Association. And, you know, obviously this bill does it creates some good dialogue, and it has created some good dialogue. But the purpose of the bill is education. It is to help educate parents, coaches, officials, we're not expecting them to be doctors, we're not expecting to be medical personnel, but at least be aware that their athlete may have sustained a head injury, a traumatic brain injury. And if they are suspicious of that, to remove them from participation till we can get further evaluation by the appropriate health care provider to make sure we don't get them back into participation too soon and cause further injury and cause that will have maybe short-term and long-term lasting effects. And so the intent is to get beyond that and allow consistency across all the youth organizations at the high school levels in terms of trying to make sure everybody's educated on this process, because right now, unfortunately, not everybody is educated on the process. And if we don't do it, there's a potential for a significant injury to somebody, and then we're going to wonder, why didn't we do something? And when there's opportunities to educate and bring people forward, to at least, like I said, we don't expect them to be doctors. We don't expect them to be athletic trainers or other healthcare providers, but to be at least aware of the signs and symptoms and aware that they may have sustained a brain injury.
So, I missed your name is again?
Brent Milliken.
Mr. Milliken, do you feel that it's essential for the directives of what to do afterwards, if there was wording that was information and about, but not being quite as directive in the rest of it, would that still meet your purposes? Because there's angst in terms of the, I think some of the strong directives that are through here that may lead to that, regardless of the protection from liability, that is going to cause either people to withdraw from providing the activities, suffer the consequences of legal action. Now, I know the last hearing, Mr. Aronson was here because he worked with State High School League, obviously is very involved, and I saw him out in the corridor, but I don't see him here. Is he here? Because I think he had wanted to testify, and we ran out of time, and so we did not hear from him, and I think that would be useful information. But, sir, you look like you want to say something as well.
Yes, Madam Chair, if I could. Thank
yes.
you. Nathan Peterson again with Sanford Health. One of the things that I would say regarding the discussion about the burden this places on coaches or could place on coaches, we actually think that it reduces the existing burden that they currently shoulder. Right now, coaches, whether they're involved in a school athletic activity or through an organized youth sports program, are making return-to-play decisions every day if they think a student may have suffered a concussion. They may not have training. Some of them certainly have the training. Some may not. But right now, they're making those return-to-play decisions. By passing this law and by including the return-to-play standards that you referenced a moment ago, that takes the burden off of them so that if they suspect a student has suffered a concussion, they get them in the hands of a trained medical provider who's better equipped to make that decision. And I think it's important that kind of return-to-play standard have the force of law, because I think we can all understand that in athletic activities, sometimes if it's a heated game, a close game, there are pressures from the students themselves, certainly potentially pressures from parents, and pressures from the desire to succeed. And this law really gives them the ability to say, no, this is important, it's in state law, we need to make sure that your son or daughter is cleared by a medical provider before we turn them to play. It's that important for their safety. So I think that this really reduces the burden on coaches by giving them that ability to take a student who they think may be injured and put them in the hands of a medical provider to make that decision. Maybe one additional comment earlier about whether or not we should expand this out to other injuries. I think it's maybe important to state that unlike another injury like a sprained or broken ankle, where there's some pain feedback and it's fairly obvious what that injury is, a concussion's not as readily recognized, which is why the education piece of this is important. And certainly there will be instances where there are delayed symptoms, which is why the bill also seeks to educate parents. So if it is 2 or 3 days later when the student's at home complaining of headaches, nausea, dizziness, they don't feel right, the parent is also better equipped to say, maybe something's wrong and we need to make sure that you're checked out. And maybe one final point that I would make in regard to the fears of opening Pandora's box. This law or a similar law has been passed in about 14 states so far. The first state that passed it was Washington in 1999. And to my knowledge, none of those states has experienced an exodus of youth volunteer coaches abandoning their activity or a flood of lawsuits coming against individuals involved with youth sports.
Okay, Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just return us to the original discussion around the legislation. And the original discussion was that currently kids are getting hurt. They're going back in too early, and they suffer severe long-term effects. And I did share in the last session that both of my sons were student-athletes, and their lives were changed as a result of concussions. And when my sons heard that this was going through, they both let me know how important it is to them and to those other students who have been injured that this legislation is going forward. Dr. Ephraim, the thing that I think is best about, one of the things is it actually puts the burden back on the pediatrician. It says the doctor has to okay before you go back in. So those with the expertise are the ones who are going to clear them to play, and that's one of the key things that has been missing is as a doctor with medical knowledge being the one to clear to play. So I would just hope that we do not derail this legislation.
Dr. Ephraim, I think you'd like to have a chance to respond to that.
I can do it. Karen Ephraim from Education Liberty Watch. Madam Chair and Senator Bonoff, I understand the intent to have more experts, someone with expertise, make the decision. But what I may not have clearly enough stated is that even for pediatricians or neurologists, because the manifestations are so varied and because these show up later, and often because with concussions there's certainly no changes on a CT scan or an MRI to say that the injury has occurred or much less that it has improved. Those decisions are difficult to make even for physicians. So I'm just saying that this is a really complicated issue, and putting that kind of onus on trainers or coaches or teams, and then even to bump it up to physicians is potentially really difficult, because the response and the healing of a concussion is highly variable from individual to individual.
Senator Benson.
Madam Chair, and thank you, Dr. Ephraim. We're overlooking the word when the youth athlete exhibits signs, symptoms, and behaviors. If there's no signs, symptoms, and behaviors, we don't expect the coaches or officials to discern out of thin air that a concussion has occurred. They're to use their best judgment. But if there are no signs, symptoms, or behaviors consistent with concussion, we don't expect them to take action. And so while you're talking about several days before it manifests and how it could be days after the injury, we're not putting an undue burden on them, expecting them to see into the future what may occur. We're asking them that when the symptoms are present or behaviors are present, that they take action. And so even if the injury occurred days before, if they notice it at that practice, they can say, okay, now I've noticed that there are symptoms and now I will take action. We're not expecting them to be punished for not taking action days before. And I think that the word when is something that's been overlooked, and it does matter. And
Senator Wolf?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, Senator, you just kind of answered that one for me. The when part of it is very important, because, like I said, back to Johnny hitting his head on the wall. And if I'm concerned, he may not be showing symptoms, but if I put him on the bench and recommend that I'm not going to let him back in until he goes to the doctor, and, you know, may or may not be a burden to the family to go to the doctor and pay the copay and all that, and in the meantime he has to sit. I do think that's a good clarification to say when, so that if I determine in the middle of a game, I want to know that I'm protected, that in the middle of a game, he passes all those, he can count backwards and do all that other stuff. So I deem at that time, he's not showing any symptoms, and I put him back in the game. And if 2 days later at practice, he shows symptoms, that's a very good thing to point out. Thank you.
Senator Bonoff.
Madam Chair, just to give a real concrete example, my oldest son had been back at play, was in a sectional playoff game as a varsity catcher in baseball throws the ball supposedly right back to the pitcher and instead threw it out to third base. I mean, just like throwing the ball, you know, right there and it goes over there. And then they pulled him and realized they were dealing with something a little more severe than they had thought. So that would be an example of a when the symptoms occurred.
Senator Benson.
Madam Chair, we had talked about the cities and whether they'd had an opportunity to look at this. And there is an amendment available, the A5, if somebody would care to read it and move that forward.
And is there any explanation or are there any questions about the A5 amendment? And would someone care to offer that?
Madam Chair, and the league does have representation here if we have questions.
Pardon me?
The cities do have representation here if there are questions that would make the author.
Do you need a motion? Has it been moved?
No.
Yeah, go ahead.
Senator Wieger moves the A5 amendment. Is there any further discussion, or do you wish any testimony on it? Is somebody representing the cities is here.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'm Dan Greenswag. I'm the Assistant Administrator of the League of Minnesota Cities Insurance Trust. And I just wanted to briefly describe what the purpose of this amendment is. And there's really two focuses of it. One is to limit the coverage of the legislation to youth activities. So, for example, if an underage athlete were to participate in a community fun run that was really primarily designed for adults, this wouldn't apply in that sort of situation. It's also designed to only apply to situations in which a coach or official is there in their official capacity. So, for example, a pickup game of basketball among children at a community center wouldn't necessarily be subject to all the paperwork requirements and everything else that comes along with this bill.
Any questions of the witness or any discussion? Not all in favor of the 8-5 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Mr. Nauman has consulted with the head of council and has an oral amendment to offer.
So, Madam Chair and members, if I can take you back to the conversation that Senator Wieger initiated about whether we were covering towns and townships. And I believe while I stepped out of the room, the committee adopted language that included township on line 1.4, 2.4, and 2.5. And with advice, I believe it might be preferable to instead reconsider the township addition, eliminate city in those three instances, and replace it with municipality. And then on line, after line 2.5, insert the following. For the purposes of this section, a municipality includes a home rule charter city, a statutory city, or a town. And the reason for that is that what we did before, we are excluding home rule charters, and this definition would capture them.
I'd so move.
Senator Wieger moves the oral amendment to substitute on. Maybe we should have.
Should I do it again?
You want to do it again so that you can follow where that's going
to
be?
Maybe it would be easiest to do it in two unless you want to do it in one. You could reconsider the addition of township. And then
The motion could delete township.
Okay, so we'll delete township.
Delete city and township.
Yep, delete city and township, insert municipality on lines 1.4, 2.4, and 2.5. Then after line 2.5, insert paragraph F. For the purposes of this section, a municipality includes a home rule charter city, a statutory city, or a town.
I think that's a very friendly amendment. Senator Benson, you're smiling in agreement?
I am in agreement with the amendment.
All in favor of the oral amendment? So. Signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment prevails and it is adopted. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Is there any further discussion? I was going to ask you, have you, since Mr. Aronson isn't here, did you work with the high school league at all on this? Or what can you say or affirm relative to where their stand is relative to this?
Madam Chair, the high school league has been consulted.
Madam Chair, I am no Roger Aronson. I will guarantee you that. My name is Kirk Stein with the School Boards Association. In collaboration with the State High School League, we have worked with the advocates in this area. They've been willing to accept many of our proposals that we were concerned about the number of requirements in terms of training, the liability piece, and I believe there's also some issues that we talked about in terms of reducing the amount of paperwork and forms that need to be filled out, and they were receptive to those things. And so we had the State High School, I should not speak for the State High School League, but Roger and I have been working very closely with them on this issue.
And you are comfortable with what's happened with the amendments and the form that it is in at this point?
Madam Chair, to this point, yes.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Would somebody wish to move the bill?
I'll move the bill as amended to the floor.
Thank you, Senator Wieger.
Senate file, Senator Wieger moves that Senate file 612 as amended be recommended to pass. There's no further discussion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
The motion prevails and the bill is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for your hard work on this. Thank you.
Thank you for your hard work as well. I think we have one more, hopefully, one more bill. And while Senator Wolf is coming, we will not be meeting tomorrow. That was hanging in there scaring you that we were going to have a committee on Friday. We will not be meeting tomorrow. We will meet next week only as required to allow. We're trying to determine what bills have met policy deadline in the House that may need some action by us, and we're not aware of that at this point, except for on the 5th of May, Thursday, we will be meeting and hearing Dr. Vander Ark on the virtual education issues. Senator Wolf.
Hello, thank you, Madam Chair. I am here to ask that we move Senate File 408. And I believe last time we met in committee, there was some concern about some clarity on what was included in this, so I would like to offer the A2 amendment.
So would you like to move to take the bill from the table?
Yes, thank you, sorry.
That's fine. Senator Wolf moves to take Senate File 408 from the table. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. And now Senator Wolf would like to offer the A2 amendment. You want to review the amendment at this point?
Madam Chair, I can. Just some additional language and a few changes in a few places. Page 1, line 6, after the first comma, putting the state organization of. And then on line 7, deleting the word teachers and putting the word employees, deleting the word shall and putting in must. Line 8, changing after itemized, insert annual. On line 9, after expenditures, insert of the state organization. Also on line 11, after employees, insert of the state organization. And line 12, after the second costs, insert of the state organization.
Okay, is there any discussion on the amendment? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We had some discussion on the bill before. Is there any further questions of the author or discussion or first? I don't know if there's any further testimony.
Madam Chair.
You want to just kind of give us the pitch?
Yep. I will briefly go over the bill again. And what this is, and I will repeat for those who might have missed it, that this is not an anti-union bill. What this is simply allowing some transparency for the members of Education Minnesota to be informed of what their dues are being spent on. Full-time employees, for example, myself, I pay $405 a year to Education Minnesota, and this is simply allowing those of us who have a financial investment in Education Minnesota to know where our dollars are going. And as far as having easy access to knowing these things currently, since the last time we met, I actually attempted to find the salaries of Education Minnesota employees, and I did not have any luck. So I don't know if I understood the website wrong or just wasn't sure how to surf that website. And yesterday I got a call from a member who wanted to know how much they paid for magazines. They called Education Minnesota. After speaking to the fourth person at Education Minnesota, they were told to go look at their local website, of which there's no information on the local website. So those just reiterate my point of the information might be out there, but it certainly is not easily accessible.
Thank you, Senator Wolf. Any questions? Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Wolf, I would like to ask you a question related to this issue of transparency and just kind of get a sense of, from your perspective, you know, how do we go about this? I have a problem with kind of singling out an organization, and I understand, you know, every one of us have knowledge of the organizations that we belong to or the clubs that we belong to. You happen to be a teacher, you have good knowledge of how this organization works. I am not. But, you know, to some extent, I think we trust that these organizations have the integrity and the capability of doing certain things, right? My presumption here is that you think that the issue of transparency needs to be addressed, that it is not clear enough, that additional legislation needs to be put in place because there is a question in here. Am I correct with this? Yeah, I'm correct about assuming that you think that somehow in here there is not enough transparency and we need additional legislation? And that's why you're proposing to do this.
Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, as far as other organizations, I can only speak to the complaints that I've received that are concerned about this. That is why I'm addressing this one issue. If you'd like to offer an amendment that deals with everybody, I think that's a huge chunk to take on. I don't know if a problem exists in other organizations. This is coming as a result of concerns I hear from people in this organization, and that is why it is brought in regards to just this one organization.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And Senator Torres-Ray, I was just reflecting. I don't know if you received a communication, but I did recently, and it just your question brings this to mind. It was from someone that had been in member at different levels in administrative organizations, and really challenging the fact that we have all of these organizations. They're essentially all paid for with our education dollars. Everything that goes to our schools, they join members for. They often are paying the dues, whether it's for elementary or secondary principals. All have got their executive directors. All have got the superintendents. All have got office space and expenses and work over here. And they said some states have essentially made some effort or to push to the combination of some of these entities, rather than when you think of the amount of money that actually gets spent. I think it does not hurt for us to have a look and to think about this, and see where, you know, because this is all money that is our education dollars that are paying these staff, that they're faculty, and they're paying that out to run the organizations that are, to ask what they're doing and where that's going. I felt that same kind of concern yesterday when one of the union representatives handed out on the fair share that the fair share could not exceed 85% for the collective bargaining and the oversight of those bargaining agreements. Magically, in every single one, it's cost 85% that is supposedly done for that purpose. Do we really know that? Isn't that amazing? Wouldn't you think it might be 83 in one place or 75 in another for that purpose? You'd never know what is used for that purpose as to whether that fair share is an amount that is accurate. So I mean, there's a lot of questions around this, and I appreciate Senator Wolf has kind of raised some of these issues for us to take a look at, because these are our education dollars.
Thank
Senator
you,
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that, and obviously, you know, if we were to scrutinize what we do with our salaries, we might find questionable things that we do with it in many, many ways, not just belonging to organizations, but, I don't know, drinking, I mean, doing a lot of things. These are our salaries, right? Mm-hmm. So if we were to really look at how do we, these are tax dollars that compensate for a service, whether that is, you know, a nurse or a teacher, our salaries. And if we're going to build scrutiny in the law to figure out how do you use those tax dollars that pay for your salary, if that's what you're saying,
well,
I think that there is a problem with that. But I think what I'm trying to ask Senator Wolf in here is, you know, the issue behind this really singles out an organization. And this organization is really teachers. And so I want to get behind this whole issue of why are we going so far in trying to investigate this? And I think I ask you, Senator, in a different committee, why is that we don't have people here testifying of, you know, for these abuses or these lack of transparency, these lack of, I don't know, whatever it is that you know, you are arguing here that this institution, this organization, is actually not doing, whether that's presenting information. I have yet to hear one person, Senator. I have so many teachers in my district, thousands of them, and they question this. They are asking me. They don't know what my position is, right? And they say, well, why is that the Senate wants to do all of this scrutiny? Is it that our institution, our organization is so bad that you just really want to scrutinize and put a law in place to have everything posted? Why don't you do this for other organizations? Or is it that other organizations are very responsible and transparent and you have found that our organization is that corrupt, or what is it? And they are concerned about it, and I don't have an answer.
Madam Chair,
why are we asking for this transparency?
Madam Chair, Senator Torres Ray. First of all, as far as the why for the transparency, this happens to be a dues that are forcibly taken by members, not even members, dues payers of Education Minnesota, because you don't even have to be a member. You can be a member and pay 100%, or you can be a non-member and pay 85%. Either way, you have money that is directly being taken out of your paycheck, and we are told that is being used for certain purposes. I think it is reasonable to be able to see whether or not those dollars that we are forcibly paying are being used for what we are told they are being used for. And as far as why is it, you know, done here, in a different organization, if I'm a willing contributor to something and I say, I want to see what you're spending my money on, and if they don't provide it, I take my money out and I go do something else. I don't have that option. So if I go to this organization and say, I want to see what my dollars are being spent on, and they say, we're already doing that, it's good enough, I don't have any recourse. These people who do come to me don't have any recourse. They can't take their money out and go to another union. They can't take their money out and go to another representation. This is the one and only option we have. We are told what our union dollars are being used for. I think it is fair for us to say, show us that this is what our money is being used for.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Wolf, I understand that, but, you know, part of my concern with this is that I think it is very clear to us what Education Minnesota actually is about. I don't think that there is a secret to anyone about what this organization does. One. Two, you know, I have constantly, for a number of weeks now, I have asked teachers to please bring me their concerns, and I have done it. I can give this to you about, you know, asking the teachers who've come here, could you tell me, do you have the problem with this? Would you like us to move legislation in this direction? The answer has been no. And you have not been able to produce one person that comes to us. They might have talked to you. And I want to take your word. I have a lot of respect for you. I want to, you know, that's, we need to trust each other. But as a legislator, you know, I want to hear this. I want to hear people saying, you know, this, you know, Senator Wolf, this is correct. And I'm here because she's found this, and I am a person who's dealing with this issue. I am a professional who is being imposed on. We have yet to hear from one teacher that actually supports what you're saying.
Senator Torres-Ray, they may not be available to come, and especially when we set agendas, it can be very difficult. But I have heard from teachers who would like to have this information. And it's not a hostile thing, but they believe they want to know, or they would like to have some choices within this. They're exclusive. Some of them I've heard saying the exclusive representative is their local. And that was Ms. Allswire told us that at the last hearing. I don't have no objection to paying my dues locally, but I'm really not interested in paying for the state and national. I hear things like that from teachers. And so asking for some information hopefully would be a healthy move within the teaching force that might improve that relationship. Who knows if we ever asked, if you really had a private, a private vote on this as to where people really stand. I think some feel that there might be more objection than anybody's willing to stick their neck out and talk about. But I think this is not an egregious request.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Torres-Ray, couple things. First of all, as far as we all know what they do with our money, can you tell me how much money goes into the crisis fund and what the crisis fund does? I don't know. So I'm just wondering if you know, since we all know what it is. I also don't know what the Teaching and Learning Foundation does. I also don't know the salaries of the people who work for me that I'm paying. I do, because I actually was able to find out. It took a lot to find out. Found out how much my field staff is making. which, by the way, is more than any teacher in the state of Minnesota. We had a field staff that we were not happy with, and we requested to have them removed from representing us. Our president requested to have them removed. Didn't happen. 25% of us went fair share. Finally got noticed. Finally got a new one. That person got paid even more than our other field staff. Okay, we are talking, again, this is not the issue here, and whether I'll start sending people to you if you want. If you've actually gone and asked the teachers, there are 70,000 teachers that supposedly that are part of this union. Exactly the kinds of questions you're asking is why many of them do not feel comfortable coming forward and saying they want to see some changes, because they don't feel comfortable doing that. I don't think anyone should feel uncomfortable saying, what are you using my dollars for? I can go online and I can tell what salary you make. As a constituent of yours, I have access to that, and I should, because I elect you, I'm paying for you. Not me personally, but your constituents. So they have that transparency. I don't have that transparency for people who work for me. These people represent me, and I don't know how much they get paid. I don't know how much money goes into the legal fees for protecting teachers. I don't know how much money goes to paying lawyers to negotiate for us. I don't know how much money goes into all of those things that I am paying. So I don't think it's an awful thing to ask for accountability of an organization that I'm paying a considerable amount of money. For new teachers who make, as Ms. Alguire mentioned, will be about $33,000 a year, $405 represents more than 1% of their gross income. I think they should know where that's going and what it's being used for. And I think
Senator Wolf, that's just the state portion.
That's just the state portion. I pay over $700 in union fees. I pay $90 to my local, $405 to Education Minnesota, $211 to the national. And so I think, Senator Torres-Ray, to answer your question, the reason why I hear it so much is not because it's coming from constituents, but because it's coming from teachers. Teachers are contacting me because they're contacting a teacher. And so maybe I've become the resource person. I had somebody calling me the other day, not even in my district, asking me some questions about it and what my suggestions were to how to get this or find this out. I do have people. I got an email saying, I didn't know I could get my money back. And so it's not clear. When you say we all know what it's used for, we all know it's used to represent teachers. What does that mean? How are they representing us? How much money am I spending to be represented by people here at the Capitol? How much money am I spending to be representing in negotiations? It's a fair question. I don't think it's an unfair question to ask where my dollars that I have no choice in spending, what they're being used for.
Senator Torres-Ray?
Thank you. Madam Chair and Senator, I don't want to continue to argue. You have a pretty... you feel very strongly about this. I think what I just want to say is that, I feel I am very reluctant to impose this into an organization. I think it's heavy-handed. I personally have not received the amount of emails and concerns that you have. I have not heard testimony indicating you have. I just want to point that out. And if this is an issue, that organizations need to address, I have to say I hope that they do, but I hope that we don't single out organizations like this. I think this has been extreme. I have not heard of an investigation that has taken place that merits this kind of intervention from the legislature. And as a senator, I am uncomfortable with being so heavy-handed against an organization. I just want to point to you might have your own reasons. I don't want to dictate in this manner to anyone. I think if the state of Minnesota hears that organizations are not being transparent, that they're misusing tax dollars, I think we should have a hearing about it. We should ask those organizations to give us the information so that we can compare. We have not done that. We have not gone out to say you know, are these organizations doing this? Are they, you know, not being transparent, not talking to their members? You know, that's a more democratic approach. This is a singling out an organization. And I personally just want to tell you, Senator, I feel very uncomfortable with doing this, and I cannot support this just because we have not done a scrutiny. We have not scrutinized other people the way we have this organization, and I have yet to really understand why.
Senator Torres-Ray, the amendment did broaden it to beyond teachers to employees, so it would affect other units,
well,
not just one organization.
Those that are, it is Education Minnesota, but it went to employees because it's not just teachers that are represented by Education Minnesota.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, back to the point I made, I would be all in favor of making legislation that would make it so that any organization where people were forced to pay into, they had to give those members the information. I'd be all in favor of that. Because in most organizations, you have the option. You can choose to become a member of the American Cancer Society. You can choose to become a part of any organization. And if they aren't providing you with that information, you can leave that organization. We are talking about an organization you cannot leave. You have to pay. The money is taken right out of your paycheck. So I think this is a little bit different than other organizations. And like I said, I'd be happy to expand this to any organization where the members of that organization are forced to pay dues to belong to.
Senator Weaker.
Madam Chair, I'd respectfully submit that both sides of it respectfully, passionately, eloquently stated their points of view. I think we know how we're going to vote. And I would suggest that you move your bill.
That was polite.
Right.
Thank you, Senator. So, Senator
Madam
Wolf?
Chair, I move my bill.
Okay, so Senator Wolf moves that Senate File 408 as amended be recommended to pass. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The bill is passed. And I believe that ends our agenda, and I think I did give you the information that we hopefully will not have to hold committee other than on the 5th next week. And there will be some conference committees along the way. We're going to continue plugging away toward reaching resolution there. And anybody is welcome to come and sit in on this. I think we're having, is it scheduled? The next one is Monday at 1 o'clock in room 5 of the state office building. So, in the meantime, if you don't have to be here tomorrow, have a great weekend.